Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Welcome everyone to your freshly delivered Owl Post. I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is always, no adjectives this week because she needs none, Drea Kaufman.
Hello! You just want me to stop counting your adjectives.
Yeah, I'm not a dummy.
You know how to work this system.
Oh, that's goodness. Funny. Well, it's so good to be back talking some Harry Potter here. And of course, you know, we didn't mention this on the last show, but Harry Potter just turned 20 years old.
I know. I feel so old.
Like, isn't that crazy that this book series has been out for 20 years? The Philosopher's Stone came out 20 years ago.
And it still is relevant today.
Absolutely. And that's one of the fun things about doing this show. In fact, we'd love to hear about your Harry Potter memories from the last 20 years. So hit us up on Twitter at Join Nerd Party, Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. You can also find us online at thenerdparty.com. And if you'd like to leave us an email there, you can do that. So go to nerdparty.com/contact, choose a show, choose Owl Post, and that'll come to Drea and I. And you know, you can always hit us up with a star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, because that really helps out too. Of course, you can find the show wherever you get your podcasts. So really would love to hear, though, about some of your early memories of Harry Potter.
Into it, or what were you doing 20 years ago?
Yeah.
How many of you were in cribs 20 years ago?
Nope, not in a whirl.
I wasn't either, just to be clear.
Good. So this week we have the Rogue Bludger, and I have to say, this chapter starts off so funny with them in Lockhart's class, and apparently, you know, after you have the problem with the pixies, you don't really try to repeat that, so you just reenact things from your books, and you make Harry Potter help you do it. Does that not sound like the worst class ever?
I don't know. Am I trying to actually learn, or am I just looking for something to bide my time? It might be terrible either way.
It does. I mean, I just feel really bad for Harry. And what I love is that the only reason that Harry is really playing along is because they need him to be in a good mood so that they can swindle him into being able to get a book from the restricted section. And that goes a lot easier than they thought it was going to.
I really like that he's a werewolf. That he makes Harry be a werewolf.
It's awesome.
Such an illusion. And it's just so funny. It's just, I can just hear Harry's eyes roll to the back of his head right now.
Well, and I love that it's going to be something that'll play such a huge part in the third book. And she just kind of drops it in here, and
sort of, here's your little treat.
Exactly.
Here you go, guy.
It's fantastic. I love it. And I love the way that Hermione really just charms Lockhart, talking about, I really wanted to understand what you were talking about and gadding with ghouls. And you know, I just need this book to help me out. And she's like, oh, yes, so clever. You know, and it's just like, oh, my gosh, this guy is just an idiot.
What about the homework assignment? Like, he gives them a homework assignment to write a poem based on his adventure. Like,
if you write the best poem, you get a free copy. You could win a free signed copy of his autobiography. So, you know, not bad.
No, this isn't a real class.
Oh, man, it's fantastic. Well, and then I love that, you know, after Hermione's charmed him, Ron's like, he's such a brainless git, but who cares? We got what we needed. And she's like, he is not. And
she is charmed by him.
Oh my gosh. And I love Ron's retort. Just because he said you were the best student of the year. Like, it's such a classic interaction between kids this age. Like,
he's such a schmoozer.
Yes, I absolutely love it. And they finally get the book that they need from the library. And, of course, Hermione is a little bit shocked by just how much goes into this potion. And the boys are starting to rethink maybe this isn't the best idea. And I love it that Hermione just gives it to him.
Yeah, me too. She's just finally, she's fed up. She hits her wall.
Well, she goes, well, if you two are going to chicken out, fine. Like, oh my gosh, she really calls them out. It's phenomenal. And I just, it is such a great moment for Hermione, I think. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. And I love how she's like, I don't know. I love how she's the brave one in this case. Like, she's the one willing to do the things that she, last book, she was literally like, Harry, don't do that. You're going to lose the house points. And now she's like, what? You guys can't steal a few things out of Snape's stock? What's wrong with you? You're like, who is this?
Yes, it's awesome. Like, she's turned into this little badass. It's so funny. Oh.
It's hilarious.
It really is. It really is. So this chapter is very interesting because the middle section of it is the Quidditch game. And honestly, you know, there's really not a ton to discuss when you're talking about a Quidditch game because we all kind of know how it goes. But this one is where we have the chapter's name, the Rogue Pledger that keeps coming after Harry. And what I really like, though, about this whole section, it's not so much that part of the story. It's the obsession of Oliver Wood comes out
with
again. And Harry's like, no, 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 I can deal with it myself. You just go over there and I can handle it. And the rest of the team is like, Oliver, you cannot let Harry deal with this by himself. And Wood's just like, all right, he said. Fred and George, you heard Harry. Leave him alone. Let him deal with the bludger on his own. And it's just, you can tell he's so obsessed with doing well in Quidditch this year. And he's not all that worried about how hurt Harry could get.
Yeah, I mean, I like how George is like, get the snitch or die trying. That was a stupid thing to say. Like, that was one of my favorite moments in this chapter. Because you can totally hear him saying that, and you can hear lots of people saying stuff like that nowadays. And now this is kind of where they're like, no, we're really in a situation where he could get seriously hurt. Why did you have to go and plant that idea in his head? Yeah, and part of it, I think, is like, I think Oliver Wood knows it's the wrong call to make, but he wants to win so badly. He's like, hey, Harry says it's fine. Let's just do it. And I think that's something we can all kind of relate to. We've been some party in a scenario like this before where, like, you kind of know it's the wrong call to make, but you don't, you're either Fred and George and you're angry about it, you're Harry who's insisting you can handle it when you really can't, or you're Oliver Wood going, I can give up the thing I really want to do the right thing, or I can just leave it up to him and say he took responsibility for it. And I was just listening to what he said. When any adult in this scenario would be like, are you dumb? No, he can't handle it himself. Like, you have to call it, and you know, you have to forfeit, and we have to check out the bludger and blah blah blah. So it was just so interesting because it's such a real life conundrum about Quidditch that really applies. We've all been someone in that little triangle.
Yes. Well, and what I also think is interesting is that, you know, Harry always rises to a challenge. You know, and I think that that's something that is really special. And, you know, Harry doesn't back down from hard things. And he is like, no, I can do this. I will do this. And part of that is his commitment to the team and to his teammates. And I think that's something that is so commendable about him. He's not going to make excuses. he is just going to do what he has to do to help his team win the game. But he's like that in every part of his life, too. And I think that's such a great lesson for everyone. Even I think today, you know, when things get hard, Harry doesn't back down. And that's just a really brave, courageous trait to have. And that's definitely, I think, that Gryffindor truly coming out in him, that Harry is willing to do whatever it takes to succeed. And not in a bad way, like he's trying to take advantage of people and things like that. He just has that gumption to keep going, even if it's all the cards are stacked against him.
In this case, it's one of those times where, like, it was to win the Quidditch match. Like, did the risks really outweigh the rewards? In this case, he lucked out and it did, but it's one thing to stand up to something when it's like the moral or the right thing to do, but another thing when it's just because you really want to win the game.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those times, but it shows the character that he does it kind of in all situations. But that's where this strength almost becomes a little bit of a flaw. It's that thing that they can hold against him and be like, well, all I have to do is, you know, put him in a spot where he really feels like he has to fight his way out, but there's really no way he can get out. So,
right.
It's a great character trait to have, but it's also that thing you have to be very aware of when you have it so that you don't get hurt by a bludger breaking your arm while you're trying to catch a snitch. Because we've all been there.
And that's what I love, too, is that, you know, there's this dichotomy between him and Malfoy, who obviously bought his way onto the team, and Harry showing his quality that, you know, the snitch is literally above Malfoy's head and he doesn't see it. And broken arm and all, Harry is able to win the game for his team. And I think it says something about who the character and the character of Harry Potter. And she does a great job. Obviously, she's set up Malfoy to be kind of the anti-hero and Harry to be the hero. But when you read the story, you look at Harry and think, oh, that's the one I want to emulate. That's what I want to be like. Even though I think many of us have probably been in positions where we've ended up acting a little bit more like a Malfoy in our lives, you know?
No, never.
Yeah. And I really like the way that she reinforces what we classically know as good character, good moral behavior through the character of Harry Potter. And yes, Harry does break the rules a lot, but part of that is him also wanting to do the right thing, no matter what the cost, you know? And so it's really cool.
That's why I feel like she made it a trinity, right? So Harry breaks the rules a lot. Ron breaks the rules a lot. But Ron also maybe embodies that little bit of Malfoy that the imperfection that we all have. You know, he brings to the table a little bit of the biased racism from living in this world. You know, he's a little snarky, a little down to the dump sometime, but honestly steps up to be like the most loyal and, you know, most trustworthy and that like true friend, you know. And Hermione brings that strict rule. Like, they all kind of bring a different character trait to the table that even though Harry breaks the rules all the time, you still see exhibited somewhere within the Harry Potter, trinity that, no, you really should follow the rules as best as possible and, you know, that sort of thing.
On top of that, speaking about, like, character and all of those things, poor Harry, you know, he lands, he's won the game for everybody, and, of course, who runs over first to help him is Lockhart, who, instead of really helping, takes all the bones out of his arm.
Oh my gosh, I love how she phrases his arrival too, because she's not like, he opens his eyes and there's Lockhart. And it's that he opens his eyes and he sees glittery teeth and goes, no, not you. Like, I love that we already know who that is.
Yes.
She does such a great job with that without beating you over the head and being like, it's Lockhart. Be like, no, we know. We know who that is.
What's so funny is that it just continues to build upon the fact that Lockhart doesn't know what he's doing.
Yep.
And I also really like that, you know, Harry, he's in the infirmary and Madame Pomfrey is talking about, you know, just, you should have come to me first. You can just hear the crotchety old nurse complaining, like, if you just come to me first, this would have been so much easier. And I really love that, like, all of Harry's Quidditch friends are in there, you know, and they're talking about, unbelievable, you're the best. That was so awesome. And then she just comes in and she's like, out, out. He's got 33 bones to grow. Get out. It's just, it's a really fun scene because I feel like it really just builds on the joy of the kids and the little things that happen, like victory in their sports. And it was fun to watch that.
Well, but the thing that this chapter starts that I don't like is that we still have an obsessed Hermione over Lockhart. And you still have that sort of trope, if you will, of the schoolgirl falling for the handsome professor. And you would think, based on what we know of her character by now, that she should know that at this point, he's not that great. Like, he's now made several mistakes. She's seen him screw up several times. They've literally tricked him into, like, letting them check out a restricted book. Like, all of these things, if this was any other teacher, she would literally be the first one in line to, like, purge them. Like, she'd be the one to stand there and be like, this teacher does not deserve to be my teacher. But this one she's sticking to. So I don't like that, especially after he does take all the bones out of Harry's arm. She's still like, well, anyone can make a mistake and be like, seriously.
I think part of that too is that age and being embarrassed about admitting that you're wrong. You know, like, for Hermione to admit that somebody she thought was so great, especially for her, he'd written all these great books, right? You know, like, for her, I think that's tough. Like, that's kind of one of her flaws, is having trouble admitting when she's wrong. And we all kind of have that. So I think
we all have something. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I see what you're saying. Rowling doesn't shy away from having some cliched tropes for her characters. But I think she, for the most part, always redeems them in the end, you know, because Ron's kind of a cliched character in a lot of ways. But he really comes through. He works through all those things. And I think that's one of the things we're watching, especially in this book, Hermione start to work through some of that stuff. And it's frustrating, too, because I think it also reminds us how much longer it takes some of us to grow than others, or maybe just ourselves. And we get frustrated when we watch that, and you're like, oh, I remember that time that it took me way too long to learn that thing that I should have already figured out.
Well, and it paints the idea that there's no right way or time, you know? Like, someone might pick it up and a couple of months, and someone else might take a couple of years, and one's not right over the other. It just took someone a different journey to do it than it took somebody else. It takes Ron walking away before he realizes that was 100% the wrong thing to do. So,
Well, and this is also the chapter where we have the return of Dobby, who tells us all about the fact that he's the one responsible for all the things that have been happening, like not being able to get into platform 9 3/4, and of course the bludger. And the most interesting thing, though, I think that we learn is the reason why he's doing this. And this is something that isn't in the movie, and it's so paramount and important, because Dobby talks about how important Harry is to other people beyond just wizards, and that he changed the world for people even like house elves. And part of that was because once Voldemort was gone, house elves were treated better because, you know, magical creatures were not treated well under his reign. And so what...
Shocker.
Yeah. But what's so great is we're really getting a picture of seeing how important Harry Potter is to the magical world itself, not just wizards. Like, he's a savior character to people beyond just wizards. And I think that's really cool. And it's something that Harry doesn't necessarily... I think this is the first realization for him that what happened with Voldemort was much bigger than he realized.
It's the kind of, it's really kind of the first introduction of Harry Potter as a concept or a propaganda versus a person. Because it's not about Harry as a person, which is where this whole Dobby kind of confusion comes from. Dobby's, you know, fixated on the person, but really it's the spirit and the ideal of Harry Potter that has drastically changed the wizarding world and will continue to, which is why you get a lot of the politicalness we get as we go forward, because it's about not necessarily personally destroying Harry Potter, but about destroying the concept of Harry Potter. Like, it's where you get this sort of existential sort of approach to everything that makes it so different. And it's something that I don't think him at 12 quite understands. And even him at 15, when this becomes even a bigger thing for him, understands. But it's definitely something Dumbledore gets, which is why they dropped him off at Privet Drive instead. It's definitely something I think McGonagall understands, and to an extent I think Hagrid understands. And that's why it's so hard for them as they get to know Harry as a person as well as this concept, is it's like torture for them, because they almost feel like they're using him to keep this hope alive, you know? But this is where you learn that that does extend beyond just the people, and it extends to creatures, and it extends to an entire shift in ideology in their world. So it's a big concept to introduce here, and especially how young all these kids are. And if you think about the intended readership, huge concept, but it's definitely not the last time she does it, but it's definitely the first time that she really imparts that upon you, and the significance of Harry Potter in general, and not just Harry Potter a person.
Yeah, it's the way in which legends and mythology and that kind of stuff impact our world, you know, and the way in which the stories about people, even if they're slightly embellished, have a way of changing the course of the future and the way people think. And
it's like Rosa Parks sitting on the bus. Yeah. Like, it's just those moments that mean so much more than her just sitting on a bus. It's about so much more than that. So Harry Potter living was about so much more than Harry Potter living, than Harry Potter being alive. Like, it's so much more, and it did so much more than just have a kid survive. Like, mm-hmm. And this is sort of that first time that you get a glimpse into the actual impact that that had. It's deep. It's so deep.
And I love it because it's kind of unexpected.
Yes.
And I think that's the thing that really changes everything, because it really is something that you're not, especially the first time you read this, I think you're not really expecting it. And definitely Harry is not expecting it. This idea.
And if you've never read the book and you've only seen the movie, you're not expecting it, because this is completely left out of the movie.
And it is disappointing.
Yes.
Because this is the thing where the books transcend the movies by leaps and bounds. It's that there's so much more depth to everything that is happening in the stories. And there's so much more than just that baseline Harry story. Because as we're talking about, Harry is having an impact and has already had an impact on the entire universe that she's created. And we're only just now finding out what that is. And by adding characters like these magical creatures, like house elves and other things that we'll see later on in the series, it expands what we know of why and how and who the importance of Harry is, you know? And I think that's... it's something that's just really, really cool. I mean, I just don't know how else to say it, but it's a really awesome thing for her to kind of open up this world to a much bigger place than you expect at this point.
Yeah. And I love that she uses Dobby specifically to do it, because he's such, I want to say he's such an innocent character. He's so childlike, and for him to come out and be so just blatantly honest about the fact that, like, yeah, his life didn't change because he's still treated like vermin, I think is how he puts it. But he saw the lives of others like him change so much. And he felt like that was so important that he would do anything he could to save that and to save this idea of Harry Potter. And that's sort of where his confusion lies, is he feels like saving the person of Harry Potter is what he needs to do to maintain this, you know. It's so... As a kid, it's relatable. And as an adult, it's almost like heart-wrenching. And like it makes you want to send money to kids in Africa. Like it makes you want to step up and do that thing that you haven't done, because you just are like, if I can save a house elf, I want to save a house elf. Like this is just, it pulls on those heartstrings. But to a kid, it's just, oh, it's so, you know, like, oh, poor Dobby. You know what I mean? Like it's relatable on all the levels, and it's just incredible how she's able to do that.
I like how you put that, that there's something really beautiful about the fact that Dobby is a character that doesn't really experience the outcome of this, but he understands the outcome for others, and he's willing to make the sacrifice if he has to make sure that others still continue to have that freedom, even if he doesn't have that freedom. And I think that's a really beautiful thing to see. And again, that doesn't come in across at the movie at all. And it's a disservice to the character, because they just kind of make him this cutesy animated character, basically, instead of this really important character who is fighting for the right for people like him to exist in freedom.
You get a little bit of the... A little bit of the naivety, a little bit of the sacrifice that he makes in the movie and in the movies, but nothing like this, like nothing to this extent.
Yes.
Not at all. And it makes future storylines and occurrences like that much more difficult to process and that much more difficult to read. So it's touching. And it's all to explain so much. I also like, and I don't think that he had this happen in the movie, but I also like how Dobby confirmed that the Chamber of Secrets was real.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I like that he got to, and I like the connection that kind of makes for Harry, like how it's interesting how that will come into play at the very end of the book. When we put all of these, when we take our little like crime map and put all our strings onto our subject and they all kind of come to the middle, it's going to be interesting how this string connects everything.
Mm-hmm. And it's also really interesting too, because not only does Dobby confirm that, but then so do McGonagall and Dumbledore once they come in, and poor Colin Creevy has also been attacked by whatever and is petrified. And I love the conversation, because there's so much said. For if you've read the story before, you understand exactly what they're talking about and why Dumbledore says what he does. And if you've never read it, you're just going to be like, eh, okay, whatever. But she asks, Albus, who did this? And his question, he says, is, it's not who, it's how.
Yeah.
And it means so much more when you know what he's talking about. Because
yeah, when you know what he's talking about, you're like, yeah, it's how, not who.
Well,
like,
and what's great about it is that it really sets up that mystery that is going to be the crux of the entire rest of the series. Like, it's going to be something that changes everything. And I think it's really cool the way she drops in those kind of things. You're never expecting that. And she just does it so phenomenally. So
even in this book, it adds mystery because if you don't know what's going on, you're like, what do you mean, how?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what? Like, it's a who. The heir of Slytherin opens the Chamber of Secrets. Like,
yeah.
How is that not a who?
Like, yeah, it's really fantastic. So, I mean, this chapter is, as we said, it's strange because the middle of it, it's the Quidditch, and there's not a lot to talk about. But the periphery of this is there's so much happening, and there's so much that she's doing. It's really wonderful stuff, and she is really starting to cement herself as a fantastic author. As you see the way in which she's layering in all these themes, and she's doing it so subtly, I think, that you really start to have to kind of think about what she's doing. And it really, it's one of those things where you see the benefit of reading these stories over and over and over again, because you see all of those connections, and it just makes it's just so much fun. And so, man, what great stuff, Drea. And I'm so...
These last two chapters.
Yeah, it's been fantastic.
Been real good.
Yes, really. I mean, and we say that most of the time, but I think we really dug
in. But this time we really mean it.
Well, no, what I think it is, though, I think we just really dug into some meat on this one. And
we're starting to hit the deeper things, and we're getting to have that in effect, and we're getting into some of the different themes that go beyond just kind of setting up
absolutely.
The world and stuff. So
yep. Yeah, no, gosh. Well, if anybody wants to talk to you about some Harry Potter or anything else, Drea, where can they find you?
Yes, if you want to tell me your history with Harry Potter and what you were doing 20 years ago when you first found Harry Potter, or however that looks like for you, you can find me on Twitter at PCFChick, or you can find me on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's Kaufman.
And you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me here on the network doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, where we talk all about Star Wars. It's a blast, so make sure you check that out. You're not going to want to miss it. I'm also on the Trek FM network talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine with Chris Jones on The Orb, and I'm doing the General Geek Show there, the 602 Club. Both so much fun. I hope you'll enjoy those. And then last but not least, I have a show called Cinema Stories, and that is all about talking about films through the lens of faith. It's a blast. We've done some great shows, I think, so far. We've got Guardians of the Galaxy 2. We did the live-action Cinderella. We did Man of Steel and Wonder Woman. So check those out. We'll have more coming soon, and I hope you'll enjoy those. And, of course, you can find all of those wherever you get your podcasts. Well, thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.